idea that exists in the hearts of everyone, to put the resources into the hands of the people, to increase the quality and benefits of their life. Let's remove the middleman. Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Dark City Compassion Club awaits you. It's your radio.
Good evening, one and all. Welcome to the Dark City Compassion Club. Tonight is the 8th of July 2015, and with us we have Tom Lloyd, who is a former chief constable. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest. Tom, can you make yourself known for the listeners?
Yes, hello there, and thanks for the invitation. Hello to all of the listeners. Have you got listeners from all over the world, or is it just the United Kingdom Home Office who tunes into you to find out what's really happening?
Well, we've got counters, and we've counted up to 142 countries.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, welcome to the Compassion Club, Tom. Tonight, you'll be joined by Sean, and myself, and Sarah, and Bob. So, if you feel like asking any of them any questions, you're more than willing, and now's the time. And we've got callers, so please call in 0161 298 0298, or just get on Skype and put in Bob's Backyard in the search and add, and we'll bring you in. If you have a question for Tom or any of the Compassion Club panel, you might have a question about growing, or your weed might be dead. You might want to call someone and ask them for help. Who knows? Without further ado, Tom,
can you
introduce yourself for the listeners?
I was just wondering about how many people you got, and apparently it's a lot listening, which is excellent. I started off life in Oxford, ended up in Cambridge via London. I read philosophy and psychology at Oxford as an undergraduate, and then I joined the Met Police, and spent 30 years latterly in Cambridgeshire doing my bit to enforce the drug laws. But as I did that, I gradually came to realize that drug prohibition was and is and will be a hugely costly, counterproductive and harmful failure. And I know sometimes people say, oh, I'm surprised at a cop having that view. Well, frankly, I'm not, because as a cop, you get to see that failure at first hand. You get to see that the billions of pounds that are spent every year on trying to reduce supply and reduce use of drugs, and clearly that's totally failed. You also see the harm that it causes, not just and I'm not here talking about the harm caused by consuming drugs, because that's actually, in some ways, a relatively minor issue compared to the harms caused by law enforcement in terms of human rights violations, giving people convictions and all the rest of it. Can you still hear me loud and clear?
I can hear you loud and clear. Yeah, I'm listening.
Oh, super. Yeah, it's just that sometimes you're not sure with Skype, because it does tend to break up unexpectedly, and then you find yourself just talking to yourself and nobody else. And so, as I said, I'm not ashamed to say this, but I'm not ashamed of what I did as a cop, because I think being a police officer is a very worthy profession and very much needed. But frankly, when it came to drug law enforcement, and I look back on my career, I realize I caused more harm than good by prosecuting the drug laws, because criminals love prohibition. They make about £6 billion a year in the UK, and some people say they make up to half a billion dollars worldwide. That's the illicit drugs market. So criminals think prohibition is a great idea, and of course, with their money, they can subvert whole governments. And certainly, I spent some time when I was at Scotland Yard investigating other police officers. I was in an outfit called CIB, the Complaints Investigation Bureau, when I was a detective superintendent. And what was quite clear was that the major cause of corruption in the police is drug dealers corrupting cops. I mean, if you're a detective sergeant leading a team, kicking a door down to arrest a drug dealer with drugs and cash about, you know, you might be on 30, 40 grand a year. Perhaps I'm a bit out of date, but that's about the salary. And you could be looking at 50, you know, you could be looking at more than a year's salary, you know, sitting around the room. So there's a temptation there. And of course, the thing about drug crime is that it's actually quite hard to detect, in the sense that both the person buying the drugs and the person selling the drugs have no interest in telling the police about it. For most other offences, you usually get somebody coming forward to the cops and saying, you know, something wrong's going on here. You know, can we help you out? Whereas that isn't the case with drug crime. So, you know, when you look at the range of people who get involved in drugs and who get involved in being, you know, arrested, prosecuted, and getting criminal convictions, what I found was is that it was almost invariably the poor, the vulnerable, the needy, the mentally ill, the disadvantaged in some way, a really unfortunate number, large number of people who suffer from problematic drug abuse have actually experienced physical, sexual, emotional abuse as children, and they're simply trying to cover up the pain. So, you know, the idea that we are, as a society, passing and endorsing laws so that the police will lock these people up rather than trying to offer them some the support they need to overcome not only the problematic drug use, but of course the underlying issues. You know, we just make it worse. And this led me to the conclusion and to challenge really this concept of the war on drugs. It's not a war on drugs, it's a war on people, and it's a war on the disadvantaged and the vulnerable. And it seems to be entirely wrong that you should be asking your police forces, you know, around this country and around the world, instead of supporting and protecting and serving people, what the drug laws do is end up, you know, prosecuting the people who are most in need of support rather than punishment. And, you know, it's for that reason I do all I can, in what way I can, to advocate drug law reform. I've been lucky enough to travel to Latin America and Indonesia, India, and North America and Europe. And it seems to me that there's a growing understanding of the need to change, even in some of the countries where you might not expect it. Certainly in Latin America, there's a growing understanding of a need for change. That includes in law enforcement as well. But sadly, that doesn't seem to be recognized by the UK government here. And that's really the hurdle, that's the barrier that's in our way, because most MPs, according to a fairly recent poll, know that, you know, drug laws haven't worked. And the population itself, when, you know, two-thirds say, why don't we do an experiment like the decriminalization in Portugal? So, you know, we're kind of winning a few hearts and minds over. Not enough yet, because we've still got to battle the lies and the myths and the kind of discrimination, if you like, that you get so often in the media. We're beginning to win the support of most of the people in this country. Now, I know that you're essentially a cannabis community, and everything I've said applies to all drugs, including cannabis. I think that the same applies, because all drugs are more
dangerous.
Hold on a minute
there, Tom. I just want to bring back the discussion for a second and just talk about what drugs are. But before that, I'm just going to have some of the panel jump in. Bob and Sean, do you want to say something?
Please go ahead, Bob.
I thought it was Sarah first, actually.
I was first, yeah.
Okay, Sarah, you go.
All right there, Tom.
Yes, thanks, Sarah.
I just want to ask you what you think about the most recent case in the newspapers. You probably know her yourself, Michelle X. You know,
Michelle, Yeah.
This is a typical example of what's actually happening every day in our country. You know, people that are actually self-medicating with cannabis are actually getting arrested and locked up and, you know, treated like criminals when cannabis, as you are fully aware, like we all are, is the only thing that really does help her condition. You know, and the improvements that she's seen are absolutely massive. You know, she was wheelchair bound before she was using cannabis. And this woman has also, we've actually got her coming on the show next week, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, good, yeah. And
it's really important for people to be aware that these are the people who are actually genuinely ill are actually a lot of the time the target, especially when it comes to with cannabis, and a lot of the time with other drugs like heroin, it's because they've been abused or, you know, they've got a lot of emotional problems. Not always, but a lot of the time. So what kind of advice would you offer to somebody like Michelle, who's presently going through what she is?
Well, I know she is. I mean, I think the advice I'd like to offer is to the Home Office and to police forces up and down the country is exercise discretion. You know, turn a blind eye. I mean, that is one of the things the police can do. It is difficult because what we're faced with is the situation that, whether we like it or not, supply and, you know, possession of cannabis is illegal, and that is the law that's been brought in by a democratically elected government. I mean, I think it's wrong. Many, increasing number of people, think it's wrong, but that's what we're faced with. So it is a very difficult position for police to be in. And I know from talking to some people who've had dealings with the police under these circumstances, when they, you know, their medical patients growing their own cannabis, is that often you get a lot of sympathy from the police officers. But if you get complaints from, you know, neighbours, other people, it's difficult for the police to turn a blind eye. But it's clearly wrong. There's no doubt in my mind that, despite what the law says, it's entirely wrong for somebody like Michelle and others. And I know quite a few, you know, as a result of my work, quite a few medical cannabis patients who have had the experience Michelle had, that they were debilitated by the, you know, strong opiates and other medicines and painkillers that they were given for their condition, such as multiple sclerosis, ME, Crohn's disease, an awful lot of conditions, chronic and disabling conditions. And cannabis was the only thing that worked for them. It may not work for anybody, but it's just a matter of common human decency and a human right, I would say, for proper treatment, not to be prosecuted for this. Now, the advice that you have to give to medicinal cannabis users is, good on you for not going to the criminal market where you don't know what product you're going to get, so you don't know what medicine you're getting, and you're, of course, supporting a criminal market, but you've just got to grow it as discreetly as possible so that you don't get noticed. And I mean, you know, I know that sounds inadequate, but given the state of the law at the moment, it is it's not as much as I'd want to say, but that's why we're all campaigning for change. And frankly, I think a real focus on the medicinal use of cannabis as a way in, as a kind of a first point of action, is the way we're going to get change, rather like they did in the US with about, you know, 22 or 23 states allowing medicinal use of cannabis, and now four states and Washington DC actually allowing the use of cannabis for, you know, all purposes. That's me on that one.
Thanks very much. Sean, have you got a question for Tom?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Sean.
So before the show, I looked up the oath the police in England and Wales take, to quote from it,
yeah,
I will, to the best of my power, cause the peace to be kept and preserved and prevent all offences against people and property. It seems to me that enforcing the drug laws directly contravenes that oath. Is that not the case?
Well, I mean, in a moral sense, yes, but in a legal sense, no. Because, as I said a few moments ago, the law says you can't have some substances. It's not really based on the harm they might or might not cause you. And in fact, the more as I said, you know, the more harmful a drug, the more need there is for the criminals not to be in charge of the market. So the argument applies perhaps even more strongly for heroin than it does for cannabis. But in a moral sense, I agree with you. It doesn't make sense to go around kicking in the doors of people who are growing cannabis to make themselves well. But the law, as it stands, really asks that the police do that, if you like, on our behalf. It's a crazy state of affairs. But you know, you take some confidence from the fact that it is so crazy. And the more we advertise the unjustness, the abuse that's in effect taking place, the how wrong it is for police officers to be, instead of serving and protecting, you know, prosecuting and you know, condemning people to misery and preventing their proper medication, the more that becomes widely known, the more chance we'll have of the law changing.
Thanks very much. I've got one more question, if that's okay, please, Tom. So,
I've got as long as you want. I'm not going anywhere.
Thank you. Do most other police and former police share your opinions about the drug war, or are most supportive of it? So, you know, are the police constables that I see driving and walking around, are they pleased about kicking people's doors in, or are they doing it, you know, in sort of with protest kind of thing?
Well, it varies. It's very difficult to know what the percentage is. If I had the money, I think I'd conduct an anonymous survey. But I would say there's a substantial number. And I think you'll find this from activists and journalists. You know, I mean, I was at the 420 protest outside the Houses of Parliament earlier this year. I won't tell you the date because you know the date. In fact, we did it on the Monday. I think it was the day after. But there were police there, and they were not interested in making any arrests. And there was including a senior officer, a superintendent there, which is a very senior rank. And they basically understood it. I mean, ask any cop whether they prefer people to take or consume ecstasy or cannabis as opposed to alcohol in terms of the trouble people are going to cause. Well, then it's clearly ecstasy and cannabis rather than alcohol. But there is this problem because police officers, like, as it were, ordinary members of the public, and let's face it, police officers are just members of the public who have been given extra powers to intervene in other people's lives according to law. And let's not get into the fact that obviously some police officers either make mistakes or are poorly motivated. But police officers, like many other people, have been subject to 40 plus years of lies and myths and deception pervaded by the media. And when you've got the sort of disgusting comments made by Peter Hitchens in the recent Daily Mail about that killer in Sousse in Tunisia, you know, he's the cannabis smoking killer, as if cannabis causes people to murder 38 people. He said exactly the same about the people who killed that soldier Rigby, you know, in southeast East London. And the trouble is, you've got some people who soak that up, and they soak up the nonsense about the so-called dangers of cannabis. You know, one spliff and you're hooked. About the number of people who allegedly get addicted to it, about the false information about it causing schizophrenia, which is simply not true, but there's probably a strong correlation because of predisposition of users. So cops have also soaked this up. So there are plenty of cops who actually think they're doing the right thing and will do it zealously, because I can tell you as a cop, kicking down a criminal's door is fun. Driving around in a fast car with a blue light on and a siren to go and arrest somebody is fun. I just happen to have realized, as I think a substantial number of my former colleagues have, is that actually doing that to enforce the drug laws isn't fun. It does more harm than good.
I really hope that most of your colleagues share that view, Tom. Thanks very much.
Well, what we've got to do is make sure that the truth gets out there as much as possible. And the other thing to consider is, you know, your own engagement in this. I think, I mean, obviously you've got a former cop here. You had, I think, Neil on recently, who's the former undercover cop, or you're going to have him on. You know, I don't know. Are you based in Manchester? Sorry for not knowing that.
Worldwide, Tom.
Well, what I'm thinking,
I'm based in Sheffield, Tom.
There's 140 countries tuning to Dark City, Bob, Tom. I can't tell you how many are currently tuning in.
No, fair enough. Now, what I'm just thinking is that engaging with police, you know, doing what you can to reach out, to use your, you know, your communication skills, the web, to get the information across to police officers, to engage with them wherever you are.
What if they're lying, cheating scumbags?
Well, the thing is that you wouldn't want somebody who was a medicinal cannabis user on the show who was also a lying, cheating scumbag, would you? In other words, they're not all lying, cheating scumbags. I assume what you'd want is somebody on your show who's reasonably articulate and who can present a case based on evidence, sincerely. And so what I could be suggesting, and it's obviously a matter for you, is that, you know, you might want to say, is there a police officer who'd like to come on and put forward the point of view that it is right to enforce the drug laws? Or anybody else for that matter. And, you know, then you've got the opportunity in a rational way to challenge their arguments.
That's fantastic. I'd like to talk with you, if you will, about drugs and drug laws and definitions and etymologies. It's great to establish a language set that we can all adopt before going into this conversation, which would help the listeners and everyone. Because in these days and times, there are lots of languages going on at the same time. So you've got like legalese, and you've got general English, and you've got also just colloquial, dialects and local things. So the definition of the word drug, it's got a funny history, actually. It comes from an old French term, allegedly, meaning dry barrels. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I haven't, actually, no. I mean, I agree with you around the kind of sense of confusion, because when you say nowadays, if you just say, I take drugs, then everybody automatically assumes you're taking a drug. Remember, there's no such thing as an illegal drug, because a drug's an inanimate object and can't be illegal. What is illegal is the human behavior around the production, supply, and possession and use of these substances. But everybody would automatically assume you're taking a substance, you know, contrary to the law, whereas it could mean you're taking medication. Oh, well, I meant aspirin. I meant, blood pressure tablets. I meant diamorphine, to confuse things even further, because I suffer from pain, you know, whatever.
Let's bring Bob in. Bob, what do you mean when you say a drug?
What do I mean? Well, something that's going to cause harm to someone, you know, I think. You know, just going back, Tom, about the officers, you mentioned officers. I'm sure you're aware of the difference between an officer and a constable.
Well, I'm not sure if there is a difference.
There should be a distinct difference, shouldn't it, Tom? Otherwise, the Misuse of Drugs Act becomes preposterous. And, of course, you'd have to support that at great lengths because, you know, it is all about sharing and learning, like you say. You know,
I'm sorry, I don't get your point. When I talk
about... if you let me finish, you might...
Okay, fair enough.
So, you know, I'm just trying to backtrack, you know, to what's been said. You know, police officers have got there, they've been lied to, you know, they haven't been told the truth, you emphasise this yourself. They've been led into a war on an inanimate object.
Yeah.
And more than once, I might add. More than once. And then we get to this point where suddenly these people now still know better. You see, it's quite obvious where people do study the law, and it's there in Black's Law Dictionary, and Sean was good enough to point some of it out for you, and I suppose we could get to United Nations, European human rights, you know, that are actually being broken by the police and the government of the United Kingdom right now. But nobody really wants to cover taking those cases and pulling those cases up for some reason. What I'd like to ask you, Tom, is quite a simple question, really.
Yeah.
And it might be a bit strange. I'm aware that you have to take a position and a role if you don't know the information. So I'm not getting at you there. But my only question is were you caned at school, Tom?
Yeah, at my prep school, I was. Well, I wasn't caned. I was hit with a gym shoe.
You suffered corporal punishment.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
Do you know when you approach someone who's in authority, are you aware you want to put your hands behind your back and clasp them over? That's a direct response from abuse, Tom. So I'm not going to hold you responsible for being misconstrued, for accepting the lies, for believing the bullshit for all those years, Tom, and still supporting it. I'm not going to, Tom, because I actually accept you were abused the same as me. You know,
that is abuse.
And there is no way, Tom, right? No way, whether it's mental, physical, or emotional, or mental, or psychological, or you can put a few more on there, you can justify abuse, Tom.
I agree.
Good.
But are you in some way saying, I mean, look, let's put my personal position aside, because I remember thinking
I'm trying to say, as a police officer, you see, out there, which is, should be a constable, right, there is no justification for their abuse on these people under any law, anywhere, at all. And yes, you have been lied to. A constable or a police officer, a man, okay, yep, who's not been abused, would never allow it to happen. So they're not. So let's not look to these people.
No. I take your point about, you know, an abused person would then not seek to abuse others. But I think that's a challengeable position. If you think about some sexual abusers, paedophiles, no, who are themselves abused.
I wouldn't judge you.
I appreciate that. But I think the point about officers abusing people or enforcing the law is that an officer can say, well, I actually think I'm doing the right thing by enforcing the Misuse of Drugs Act, by arresting people who are growing, you know, as they would say, producing cannabis, even if it's for their own medicinal purposes, because that's, as it were, for a greater good, which is the fight against drugs. Now, they may be wrong, but I think that that is a position that I think would be interesting to explore. Not with me, because I don't hold that position, but if you can get others
to discuss it. In all fairness, Tom, you don't hold the position now, and those gentlemen are in the same position you once were. They've been lied to, they don't really believe it. They actually stand in authority in the same position as you were being abused. Perhaps they weren't caned, but abuse is abuse, Tom. You know, we're not going to justify it, I'm sure. And the thing is, it's not those officers' job to determine or that you're asking them to be the judge. It's not their job.
They're exactly not being the judge, because what they're doing when they're enforcing the drug laws is they are enforcing the laws that have been created by Parliament and may, through obiter dicta, have been adjusted by the judiciary. But I say they're enforcing the law of the land.
Well, they definitely adjusted. I don't know if it was by the judiciary's personal hand, but you've mentioned that yourself, Tom. You know, that it's become preposterous, hasn't it?
Well, and, I mean, you know, I agree.
To respect, Tom, what it sounds like to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you mentioned about other police officers coming on. Yeah, they've come on here and they lied blatantly. You know, we record everything live. What's said now can't be edited. It can't be changed.
Good.
So, you know, and they lied. That's our experience. They come, they tell us one thing, and then they change their mind within. And that's good. For me, it's good that individuals will start to be honest and truthful. It's not to defend a position, you know, and that's what's happening. You know,
of course it's happening, and that's what we're trying to fight against, you and me both. We're trying to...
No, Tom, we're not. Just get me this right, you see. And you're making this divide, Tom. You see, you are a member, or used to be a member, or support a fraternity that thinks there's a war on drugs. And I agree with you. You see, you're losing, Tom.
There's no doubt.
You've lost the war on drugs.
Excuse me, Bob, you may misunderstand me here, that Of course, the so-called war on drugs, the war on people, has been lost. It is a hugely costly, counterproductive, and harmful failure. That is my position, and that has been my position for a number of years. Well, of course we agree. I mean, that's my position. Perhaps you misunderstood me when I first came on, but my position is we should end prohibition now. We should have ended it decades ago. We should have never started drug prohibition in the first place because it's been such a mistake. I mean, that's my position.
I'm not being personal to you, Tom. I'm just saying the facts that you're asking the police officers, right? Because they are officers. They're not constables. They're not acting as constables.
No, they are constables.
Well, you can, man. Well, you need to talk to the guest who was on last time. He was an undercover officer, and have us listen to what he's saying, because you're contradicting one another. And I don't want you gentlemen representing that leap and those sorts of things,
you're talking about Neil Woods. In what way am I contradicting Neil? I find that surprising.
Well, first it's consent. The law's consent, okay, isn't it?
What do you mean the law is consent? It's the law is consent.
Yeah, your police in the United Kingdom is consensual.
A fundamental principle and a desire is
fundamental principle, and that's what we've got to get back to, Tom, because I think the fundamentals of the police and the services, all of them, fundamentally, they rock, Tom. But something's happened. You've said it yourself. You've been lied to and cheated and coerced and, so the fundamentals have gone. Now let's get back to the fundamental, Tom. Look, where's the victim, for instance, within this hideous crime? Fundamentally in law, where's the victim in the hideous crime? That lady. The lady who was arrested.
Yeah, I agree.
No? Yeah, are you with me, Tom? I was going to say, I'm not looking at an argument with you, bro.
Well, I don't understand. You seem to be getting quite excited about it.
Oh, I am excited, Tom. We're winning, you see. We're winning this war, slowly but surely, one little step at a time. People are becoming educated that they've been lied to.
Which is what I said a few minutes ago. Ooh. I said public opinion is changing. We are. I mean, what I don't quite understand is there's a kind of note of sort of tension, if you like, in your voice or your attitude. I appreciate you're passionate about it. I'm passionate about it as well. But I just can't quite understand the kind of line of your talking, the line of your questioning. And I'd be very interested to hear
You kind of rang with it, you see. That's my line here. It's not to, I don't want you to understand me, really. I'd like to be alongside us in this, Tom.
But I am alongside you.
Why would you think I'm having a go at you then? It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Anyway,
I think there's other people got questions for you, Tom.
The tone of your challenging.
Say again?
Listen,
Tom, I'll tell you why it might be a bit challenging, briefly. We ain't got a lot of time, you see. We're a bit delayed. But briefly, Tom, I worked with the CID, catching criminals, who actually came into my home and tried to cut my fingers off one night. Yeah. I worked closely with them to catch those criminals. And then they come and raided my house, Tom. Okay, right. You know the people you're saying we should work closely with? When we do, they come and get us 12 months later, Tom. You don't see it in the newspapers, Tom, because they don't cover it, Tom. It doesn't happen. Yeah. But you know now, Tom, because you have put your little toe in this for a little while, that some of us have got a right to be more than a bit fucking passionate. People are dying right now, Tom. And that's why I'm passionate about it. And I am only passionate, Tom. I am. I don't let my anger come to the surface.
I'd love it if
you would rally round with us and let's get to the real crux of it. You know, let's prosecute police officers. If they don't make the right decision, Tom, if they do try and take somebody to court because the Crown feels guilty, the Crown feels abridged or upset, what? It's ridiculous, Tom, what's happened to the law in the United Kingdom. It should be for everyone, and it obviously isn't. And you were fighting for cannabis, bro, and you think this is all about cannabis. This is Dark City, bro. We fight to bring people together and bring forth change. That's what it should be about. Not us fighting. It really shouldn't be. We should all be able to drop our misconceptions of the past. We've all got them. I know I have, Tom. You've told me about the ones he told you. We've all got them. We've got to be prepared to drop those misconceptions and allow our passion to create a much better place. And we could do that fundamentally within a matter of moments.
How would you harness that passion? Yeah. So that you achieve, say, the repeal of the Misuse of Drugs Act?
Yeah, well, I don't. It doesn't bother me, Tom. It's my brothers and sisters. I live in Spain, me, Tom. I can carry on helping my brothers and sisters, you know, privately, to do what we do in private, creating no loss or harm or breach of anyone else's peace, pretty much. I'm interpreting that into an English kind of way of looking at it. Well, that's it. What's private here, Tom, remains private. No corporation, no corporate business or crime has got the right to enter your home without permission, unless there's
yes,
a
they have.
Complaint. Not here, they haven't, Tom.
Oh, not in Spain. No, Spain
no,
is a different.
You don't know what
different.
Privacy is, Tom. You haven't got any. You've never experienced it, probably, you know, since you were caned as a child. Anyway, I'm going to shut up, Tom. We can talk later. We can talk later, me and you. We really can, bro.
Yes, guys, you can talk later. I'm sure you've got loads to talk about. Tom, that was a big grill in there by Bob.
It was extremely odd because it felt like a grilling.
Bob's extremely odd. Bob's a very odd person.
And I was being grilled on the basis that I agreed with the end of Prohibition, which seemed like a strange stance to take. However, there we are.
Who's next? You know, I think everyone's just been blasted out the wall. Oh, hold on. Paul wants to say something. Paul, can you come on for a sec? Paul, are you with us?
Yes. Hola, Paul.
Can you hear me?
Paul, you're breaking up a bit. Have a go.
Is that better?
Ask your question, Paul, if you've got a question.
Yeah, hello, Tom. Hello, Tom.
Yes.
Hello, Paul.
Carry on.
But where I am on this, I've got Crohn's disease. I've had it since I was a child. I'm in my 40s now.
Yeah.
I'm currently trying to come off a 15-year tramadol dependency addiction, prescribed and encouraged every time. Basically, I just want the opportunity to ask you something. I'm not having a go at you.
Well, again, it seems rather odd to come on here as a former cop who agrees drug prohibition, and people say...
Well, honestly, I really am not having a go at you.
Okay.
I just want to ask one thing, right?
Yeah.
From all those years of working, you've probably got some amazing stories. Is there any real stories that got to your heart and maybe made you into this person you are now since you've left the police force? Situations where you have to go to someone's house and they're in pain, or I don't know. Do tell.
Yeah, well, okay, I'll think of one. When I was a young constable, because I must say I've had doubts about drug law enforcement for many years. I was a young constable in the West End of London, and there was, a relatively small problem with heroin and heroin overdoses. But the people who overdosed would often collapse around Piccadilly Circus, which was a place where drugs were around. There was child prostitution, all sorts of things. Soho wasn't a very good place. It's not a brilliant place now, but it was much worse then. And some of these people would be taken to the Central Middlesex Hospital, which is on my patch, and they'd be put into a room which was colloquially known as the pit. To recover and then be, then be thrown out again. And I remember thinking...
Like the drunk tank that they have.
Like a sort of drunk tank. And I remember thinking at the time, this was a pretty awful way to treat these people who clearly were, in extremis. Somebody's son, somebody's daughter, somebody's mother, somebody's father. But, and that's stuck in my mind since then. I remember also leading a raid on a gang of drug dealers who operated in a pub in Hampstead. And it was, in policing terms, a very successful operation. But when I looked at who we'd arrested, about a dozen people, they were all black. And that wasn't because we only arrested the black people. It's because the only people dealing were black people.
Yeah.
But my eyes are being, they're stuck in my mind because, like, what is this? What's going on here? And we now know that the law enforcement is in fact racist and completely disproportionate to the use of drugs.
It is, but it's for many reasons as well. I mean, that
well, then Many societal reasons.
Because of the poverty, more black people living in poverty.
Indeed. But the end product is enforcing drug. I said earlier that enforcing drug laws tends to go for the vulnerable, you know, the needy, maybe the poorer, the less advantaged, which could be
often going for the man at the end of the ladder, and that's pointless, isn't it? It's like picking the heads off flowers. You know, you're not really getting anywhere.
Well, the other thing I remember is just of one of them, there was this big drug dealer in East Anglia. And when arrested, he got, nearly 20 years, I think. So he was a big dealer. But it took about over a year to gather.
What do you mean by that? Like,
well, I mean, heroin.
It was an idea, yeah.
You know, he was a big fish. We spent a year's resources to gather the evidence. We then locked him up. It had virtually no impact on the drug supply because it doesn't. You arrest a drug deal, you create a drug opportunity. When in Peterborough,
you inconvenience people for maybe an hour if they've got lots of friends or contacts, a day if they haven't.
Well, exactly. And I also remember we mounted a big operation. I did one in London, in northwest Westminster, but also in Peterborough. Arrested a shedload of street dealers, lots of people locked up, no impact, long-term impact on the market. From my experience, it just doesn't work. And I must say that, you know, from a personal perspective, Paul, I'm very sorry to hear you suffer from Crohn's. And I know others who do, who find cannabis extremely helpful for their condition. And, you know, it is, for me, it's morally wrong that people like you should be prosecuted or live in fear of prosecution, if indeed that's your situation. And that's why I want to change the drug laws.
Well, thanks, Tom, for that. I respect you for that.
Well, I do what I can. I do what I can.
Discovering how good it could be.
So you broke up a bit there. You broke up a bit there. I didn't catch that.
Just I'm only recently discovering how good it can be, and I'm realizing that, I mean, most people with Crohn's sort of flirt with depression or live in depression. I mean, I try and do the worst one. But cannabis can just... It could replace all of those antidepressants, the ones that are really quite bad and have a reputation for causing suicides and
behavior,
you know, and addiction.
Paul, have you heard of the United Patients Alliance?
Yeah. That's kind of what's introduced me to this world, really. I went on Facebook one day and decided to join some cannabis groups and just got lucky enough to meet Alex as one of the first people I spoke to.
Oh, you're Alex, and obviously there's Clark French, John Liebling and others. He's facing prosecution, sadly. So there's a whole community there. And I must say, if anybody here is listening and in the UK and they're considering or are using using as a medicine cannabis, the United Patients Alliance, and you'll find them on the web and you'll find them on Facebook. They're a really good bunch of people, and I've spoken at some of their public events. And if there are people who aren't in the UK, because of, you know, modern communications, you can still get in touch, you can communicate, and you can share good experiences. But I'd hope that there would be organizations growing up all over the world to support people who, for medicinal use, you know, who have medical conditions that cannabis can help.
Yeah, I agree, definitely.
Well, that's good. Well, I'm glad you're engaged with them. Have you spoken at an event yet, Paul?
No, I mean, I've only recently, this is the second time I've had the courage to come on here, really, but it's in the pipeline because as I grow in confidence, who knows, maybe my health will improve.
Well, I think so. I mean, there are people like, there's a bloke called Greg as well, who's a Crohn's sufferer, and he has to watch his diet, but he's a very active individual, and I see him at a lot of different events, and... you know, getting in touch with him, it could help you to, you know, to get the right balance. Because, I mean, I don't know whether you don't have to tell me this. I don't know whether you're getting your cannabis from the street or from, you know, from from your own supply, but a lot of benefit, as I understand it, can be from getting the right strain, the right balance of THC and CBD. And you know, let's hope you can do that if you're not already.
Well, it's a bit of a minefield of illegal supply that has been for a long time.
I know, and what's really annoying is medical users who actually say, "I don't want to supply the criminal market," partly because of all drugs are more dangerous than the criminals supply them, and you don't know what you're getting, so you don't know if you're getting the best medicine. And also, of course, you're feeding the criminal market, and the criminals use violence and corruption to protect their profits. And of course, that's what prohibition has done. It's created that vast criminal market, making about £6 billion a year. It's an absolute disgrace, and certainly is an excellent.
You mentioned money there. The American model where they're incentivized to arrest drug
absolutely.
Cases. So it's a bigger money maker in some states for the police. Well, probably not. I was going to say that it's for the criminals, but probably not actually. But they do earn a hell of a lot of money from it.
It would
keep the drug war going for a much longer time if that was to come here.
It's rather sad that you've actually got, people, not just the criminals who profit, the prison service profits, law enforcement. I mean, there's billions spent on police activity.
If they find cash in a car on the side of the road, that goes to the police station.
I know.
We'll get some money from that.
It's outrageous. And actually, we do have this. We have hypothecated, if the police seize funds from drug dealing, some of it does go back to the police. And when I was a chief constable, I argued against that because I think policing should be. It doesn't happen in quite the same way. If, for example, somebody's arrested and going through a judicial process, some of the money they have can be legitimately seized, then a proportion of that, it's about half, I think, can go back to the police force that seized it. In America, they don't have to have that kind of burden of proof.
Of the police force.
Yeah. Well, it can go into the budget. And I think that's wrong because I think that you shouldn't have police forces incentivized.
Shouldn't have doctors incentivized either.
Well, exactly.
I don't think it's a good way of getting good business and work with integrity, is it?
Well, I agree with you entirely. I mean, the police is a public service. And it should be responsive to the public, but it should also be independent, so that you can't have direct political intervention in the operational decision making. And it's a tricky balance. But it sounds rather odd because I'm arguing against myself in a way, because I'd like the Home Secretary to say to the police service, enforcing the drug laws is no longer a priority. But frankly, Theresa May is not going to say that. What she does say when she was questioned by the Home Affairs Select Committee couple of years ago was I don't actually know of any evidence that drug law enforcement actually helps to reduce the supply or the consumption of drugs, but I just believe it does. She's got no idea. This is the Home Secretary of the seventh. Yeah, she said that I keep an eye on these things. I mean, I was told I just dipped my toe into these things by Bob, but I've got at least my foot in this business, if not any more of my body immersed in this. It feels to me as though I'm fully immersed because
give me 20 minutes after the show, Tom, and I'll get your head under, bro.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bob. Maybe I've had enough of you just for today. Maybe we can get back again another time. The other thing is,
last time, Tom, I stood right next to you, man. You patted me on the back and said, "Carry on with the great work." But you think your police, ex-police senses might pick that up.
I know what you're doing is passionate, and I know you're doing it for all the best reasons, which I support. And what you're doing should be able to be done without any interference from the law. I think we're pretty clear on that.
It is, Tom. Like I say, I haven't got any problem. I haven't got an issue with you. The only thing I think you're not getting is it isn't a war. It's not our war. It was never a war. We're from a completely different culture, man. Our culture's networking. It turns the dirty, green, slimy planet that those lying, cheating scum, and you've talked about them, they lied to you.
I know. Okay, we've covered this, Graham.
We solved their problems. We're not at war. It's not our war. We never wanted a war. Just because we're winning Because, you know, it's so simple. People are growing up. Kids are growing up. You can't beat us all. You can't lock us all up. Eventually, we will take over the prison from within.
Well, There's no doubt drug prohibition will end. And I think it'll end in a bit of a rush sooner than we think. Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's got to, because it's clearly madness. And the more we can do from our own perspectives to bring public opinion around to actually then turn on the politicians and say, why are you doing this? You've got to stop. It's unjust. It's too expensive. Right. It doesn't work. We want our police to be serving the community, solving real crimes, not abusing people, and not wasting all that money on the futile drug war, and actually do some good by arresting people for proper crimes rather than arresting people for perfectly legitimate lifestyle choices.
The government's for genocide and Acts Against the War Act, you know, for war crimes. I'm right with you, Tom. We should push it all the way. And the bankers for robbing us and stealing off us. The government's on a haul for manipulation, you know, through that, which ends up with us like we're fighting and we're not.
Can I cut you off? Because I think Sarah wants to say something.
Yeah, sure, man. Excuse me, everyone. Right, Tom. Great to talk with you, man. Very passionate.
Sarah, do you have something to say before we go? We've only got 5 minutes left.
Yeah, I do.
Hi, Sarah.
All right, Tom, how are you doing? You right?
I'm fine, thanks. Yeah, I'm enjoying this. It's good fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's serious and good fun.
Yeah, I thought you might enjoy it. Neil enjoyed his time as well, you know. And I always sit there thinking, oh, my God, are they being interrogated too much? And then I remember how many people you two have probably interrogated. So it makes me feel a bit less bad. But anyway, what I want to say is I'm actually the Yorkshire representative for the United Patients Alliance and also for the Normal Women's Alliance. And we've got an event coming up in Hebden Bridge. You're very welcome to come.
Sarah, I know you. Sarah, I know you, don't I?
Yeah, you do know me, yes.
Yes, I thought I did. I was just thinking from the voice and Sarah, and now you put yourself, because I met you in York.
Yeah,
I
invited you to come and speak at the United Patients Alliance event in York.
Yeah.
You very kindly took up the offer, and you did a great speech. And I've seen you at Reading, I've seen you at Bristol,
I've met you
a few times. Tom does absolutely great work now. He works for the National Coalition of Cannabis as well, and that's a great umbrella group that we haven't had a chance to talk about, but it's an umbrella group of all the groups. So just have a look at Tom's work and have a look on YouTube in some of his videos. He does do some great stuff, you know, and
you're
I'd like
fine.
To say thank you for actually having the guts and the courage to stand up and, you know, say what you do because I know it does go against the grain for a lot of your colleagues and everything. So it's great. But we've got an up and coming event in Hebden Bridge on the 16th of July, starting at 7 o'clock at the Trade Centre, which is the Trades Club, which is a world famous actual club. But with the UPA, I've also got one on the 18th of July. I want to plug that one as well in Brighton, and that's at the Friends Meeting House because it's our first birthday. So if you can get down to either of them events, it would be great to see you there. And it's co-hosted with Normal Women's Alliance, and we've got loads more events coming up. And I'd like to speak to you about some of these events that we've got coming up in Sheffield and other areas as well.
If you through Facebook, you can messenger me or whatever the current thing is. Is that the easiest way to communicate?
Yep, I'll get through. I'll message you definitely.
Do that, and I can see what I can do. I've got some availability, but. I mean, I must say also to anybody else who might be listening, go along to these UPA events because, first of all, you learn a great deal from people who are actually struggling with very difficult, you know, conditions and using cannabis as a medicine. But you'll also meet other people. I mean, there are people who come along, and I know because I've met them, who maybe are cancer sufferers and, you know, have heard that cannabis can treat people with cancer and bring, you know, benefits, if not cure everybody, benefits to people's lives. And, you know, as I said, the opportunity to learn, but also the opportunity to meet people like Sarah and then get engaged, because the more of us engaged in this from all our different perspectives, the more we change public opinion and the more we're going to change the law of the land, in my view.
Yep, I agree with you there, Tom. Thank you.
Good for you, Sarah. Well, thank you for all the work you do. I know how much you put into this. And We're not paid, in case anybody's wondering. There's nobody, sadly, coming up the great big checkbook. Hello, Richard Branson, are you listening? To make life a bit easier, because everybody has to spend what little money they've got on, you know, travelling to events and all sorts of things, you know, like that. So there's an awful lot of dedicated people around. And, you know, from my perspective, I've been greatly heartened by meeting over the last few years or so, so many dedicated people who want to challenge the status quo, because not only do they know it's wrong, it simply is wrong.
Thanks ever so much for coming on, Tom. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for everyone on the panel tonight. It's been a really great show. Just brilliant. So, can you just plug your what was it? Hold on. Convention, Greenwich.
Breaking Convention is a group of people who, as it says, break convention, interested in substance abuse. Or it's not having substance abuse, interested in the positive uses of many substances, and also spirituality and a range of other things.
Billy, we're going to have to finish there.
An idea that exists in the hearts of everyone, to put the resources into the hands of the people, to increase the quality and benefits of their life. Let's remove the middleman. Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Dark City Compassion Club awaits you. It's your radio.